Chạy mau lên, chúng ta phải rời khỏi nơi đây.
Get out, run. We must leave this place. It is not safe here. They are going to destroy this whole place. Go, children, run first. Go, go, now.
That's Kim Phuc Phan Thi, and today on Focus on the Family, you're going to hear her amazing testimony about how God has redeemed her life. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, April 30th, 1975 was the fall of Saigon in Vietnam, which brought an end to the Vietnam War. Every war brings casualties, and lives are forever changed. Kim's is one of those lives who was impacted and will never be the same. And people she encounters are never the same because of the testimony that God has given her. Mm-hmm. People will know her or remember her as the Napalm Girl, the central figure of one of the iconic Pulitzer Prize winning photos, The Terror of War, I think was the title. I remember it as a child. I was probably 8 or 9 when I saw it, and it caught my attention and really galvanized the ugly side of war. So many around the world saw it and had that same response. She's the young girl running naked down the road, her skin on fire with napalm. And today you're going to hear her story. Kim's story, if you're not already there, Kim's story is going to, I think, convict you to seek God.
Yeah, there's a lot of perspective and a lot of amazing interventions by God in Kim's life, and we're in for quite a conversation today. If you have to run at all during our discussion today, please know Kim has written a great book called Fire Road. It is riveting. And Kim and her husband, Tuan, have 2 grown sons, and they live near Toronto, Canada.
Kim, welcome to Focus on the Family.
Thank you for having me.
It is such an honor to have you here. You write in your book, which is a wonderful, difficult book, Fire Road, and that iconic picture right on the cover that so many millions of people have seen, of you running down that road that day, literally on fire from that napalm. But you talk about peace in your book, and the kind of the cornerstone is how important peace was to you. How has God's peace defined your life now?
That is, I can say, it is a miracle. It's a turning point in my life when I became Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ. And because of that, I have peace and joy. And every time I pray, God answers my prayer. Because the secret is, I believe that God will answer. And God, peace is mean too much for me, inside and out, because during the time I endure so much about pain and survivor, and my life is just upside down.
Yeah.
I didn't have any peace. My heart is full with hatred, bitterness, and anger.
Yeah, but before that, in the first 8 years of your life, in your book, you mentioned what a wonderful family you had and things were good. Describe that before the war, and your mom and dad even shielded the kids from the fact that the country was at war. What was your regular life like before the bombs hit?
Wow, I never forget. Before the war happened, in my life, in my village, in my family, we just living in the countryside, like paradise.
Right. Your mom and dad had some acreage. You had cattle.
Very much everything.
Yeah.
Every time I got into my the gate of my house, I felt like princess.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so proud of my family, very well off.
Yeah, and you were 8 children, right, in the family, and you're number?
I'm number 6.
6. So it was joyful, is what you're describing. In that context, though, your faith was different. It wasn't a Christian faith at that time.
Yes.
Describe what people in your village believed. And
I was raised in the cow-dye colorful faith.
Cow-dye.
Yeah.
What do the cow dye believe?
They believe in everything. Uh-huh. Whosoever they name on that list, we worship it.
So all religions are kind of on par.
Yeah.
And you respect each other's religion, and there's many ways to heaven. Is that a fair description? It's
exactly like that. Right.
So very tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my problem is something missing in my heart.
So you knew that even as a child?
Yes.
You could feel there was something missing.
Because I try my best to worship them, to pray so much, and I practice my faith in the Cow Dai Temple so many times, and even I vegetarian in order to avoid all the sins against God, something
right,
like that.
That if you ate correctly. I mean, those are practices that are around the world in different forms today. And
yes.
And we're going to get to the power of Christ and how he made a difference and awakened in you salvation and all those right things. But I think it's important for people to hear where you started. This is your childhood. This is your part of the world that you grew up in. That fateful day, June 8th, 1972, what were you doing? What was going on? Were you aware of the trauma going on in the country? What was your family life like during the war? And then what happened on that day?
Well, my family, we know about the war, but the war never touched us in that village.
So you felt safe?
We felt safe. Of course. And then there are so many refugees came to our village to live survivor for there. But then in June 8, 3 days before that, my village was occupied by the North Vietnamese soldiers.
Okay, so they were coming
came,
in.
Yeah, and they wanted to occupy my village.
Okay.
And my mom knew the war will come. We were in the dangerous moment. So eventually, they allow my family to hide in the Cow Dai Temple. So we move into the temple for 3 days. And then the third day, June 8, I remember as a children, we just allowed to play nearby the bomb shelter.
Okay.
Then in the morning, we heard about the noise of burning outside, but not inside the temple. And then after lunch, we saw the color mark and into the temple area. That means they dedicated the temple was going to be bombed.
Oh, so they marked it with a color bomb.
Because that is they,
so they targeted
before
it.
They target,
okay.
They have to drop the mark.
Right, for the pilots, right?
Yeah. And then the South Vietnamese soldiers who protect us there,
right?
They yelling. They say, oh my goodness, we have to go.
So they start yelling to you kids. What did they yell at you?
Because they say they will destroy the temple, all of us here. So we have to run.
Right.
And that's why they call the children run first, and then the adults run after us with belongings and the children that they couldn't run, right? Mm. So I remember I was running just in the front of the temple. It is, you know, between the front of the temple and the road number one.
Right.
It's just right there.
The main road.
The main road. Then I just got into the road number one, and I saw the airplane so loud toward to me.
Coming right at you.
Yeah, so fast. And as a child, I just frozen right there. I didn't run. I didn't know why. It's a child. Then I saw four bombs landing. And I heard the noise, boop, 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 boop. And suddenly, the fire everywhere around me.
Mm.
And I, of course, my clothes is burned off by the fire. Then I saw the fire all of my left arm, and I use my right hand, I wrap it up.
Yeah, to try to wipe off the napalm.
Exactly.
Right.
Then that's why it's terrible pain here, burn here. And at that moment, I terrify. And I still remember my thought, oh my goodness, I became ugly.
That's what you thought right at that moment?
Yeah, because I got burned. I know that is I wasn't normal.
Yeah.
And then I thought people will see me different way. But that right the moment, I was terrified. And I didn't see anybody around me.
Yeah.
And then I just ran out of that fire. And I saw my brothers one side and then my cousin one side and some soldiers there. And we kept running and running.
Yeah. And you ran down that road. And of course, that's where the Associated Press, I believe, the gentleman who shot the photo, he was on that road. And you became good friends with him, right?
Yes. I call him Uncle Oot.
Uncle Oot. And he took the picture. Describe what happened next, though. You're not, obviously, you're in pain. You're on fire. And it's not a literal fire, but the napalm is burning your flesh.
Exactly.
And you're there. And what happened?
When I felt so tired, I couldn't run anymore. I stopped. Mm. Then I saw a lot of soldiers. At that moment, I just saw the soldiers, you know. I didn't know journalists. I didn't know anyone there, just the soldiers and my brothers and my cousin. Then I stopped, and I called out, too hot, too hot. I was so tired.
Yeah.
Then I remember one of the soldiers gave me some water to drink. And then because I cried out, too hot, too hot, he tried to help me. He poured water over me, over my skin. And that means with the water react with napalm. It means cook more.
Yeah, the fire intensifies because it takes oxygen out of the water.
Exactly.
And burns your skin even more so.
And I pass out.
And what took place? What did they do with you in that moment? You passed out. You're laying on the road. Who took you where?
Number one, I learned from Uncle Oot, the photographer.
Yes.
He told me later, after he took my picture, he rushed me to the nearest hospital.
Uh-huh.
And he dropped me there. So he hurried running to the dark room to develop his film. And I was in the hospital nearby my village, as I was severely burned. So they moved me to another hospital in Saigon, like First Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Then I was there for 3 days. Now, another story I learned from my mom, that my mom and my brother found me in the morgue.
They found you in the morgue?
Yeah.
Did they know you were alive or did they thought you died?
I think they have no hope. No hope. At that moment, I not blame them because, as I learned later, that there were so many patients arrived from different places around Vietnam. So there were so many of them. So I think they consider whosoever still alive, they can have a treatment. But for me, it is no hope.
No hope.
So why they spend time with me.
So your mom finds you in the morgue. Have you talked to her over the years? I'm sure you did, about her emotions. What was she feeling to see her little beautiful daughter?
At that time, I believe that they have to do whatever they should do. I know that my mom suffers so much.
Yes.
And then some miracle happened when she took my body from the morgue to the lobby, to the entrance of the hospital. My dad arrived from another place, another hospital.
Right.
And the miracle happened right there. Somehow I learned from another journalist, tried to help me, Chris Wayne.
Yeah.
And then my father arrived, and then everything together, eventually they transfer me to the Bosky Burn Clinic, where they have the best treatment.
And so you were admitted, and when did you wake up? Are you aware at this point what's happening to you?
Wow. I wish my memory not coming back.
Well, it's trauma, and
it's
just
really,
that.
Really scary when I remember every morning the nurse came to me and took me to the burn bath. Wow, that is a dead time for me. It's so painful.
Right.
And they have to do that. To put my body in the burn bath with something, ingredients to make my dead skin, you know, softer, easier to cut all my dead skin off.
Right. And you're 9 years old.
Yes.
I mean, you had to be thinking, what is happening to me?
As a child, I didn't think much. I just cry. And when I couldn't cry anymore or bear the pain, you know, so I pass out.
Kim, just to wrap up that period of life for you, 16 surgeries, and what was happening spiritually for you? You were a peaceful person in a peaceful environment. And then war strikes your village, you are hit with napalm, a gel that burns your flesh, you barely survived. Now you're on a road to recovery, hopefully, probably not knowing if you will make it. What is your heart talking to you about? What are you, as a 9-year-old girl, what are you saying to yourself? What are your mother and father saying to you to try to help you?
Yes, as you read my book, I was so touched and cry when I learned about my father. He spent all his time being with me.
Staying with you.
Yeah, stay with me.
Probably crying for you.
Wow, that is so hard. Even now, every time I read my book, I cry. Okay, my parents wish they can suffer for me.
Take that suffer. Yeah.
Rather than that little girl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow.
That had to break their heart.
Right.
To see their little girl suffering that way.
And I heard a lot of time that they pray that I should die. And I didn't understand why. But later, I understand that.
They didn't want you to suffer.
More than that, in the wartime, people die unsuddenly. Mm-hmm. Like 5 minutes from now, you can die.
Yes.
Because of fire gun or bomb or shooting everywhere. So they want me to die before them.
Well, to ensure you were taken care of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They didn't want that they die before me and no one take care of me. I say, Mom and Dad, so wonderful.
That's the love of a parent, isn't it?
Amen.
And it's really the illustration of the love of our Heavenly Father for us, too.
Exactly. But I didn't know at that moment. That is, I didn't know that my God loved me that much.
Did you know who that was in that moment? How did you...
In my religion that I was educated, raising that cow die, I have so much in my mind, is so many gods that I pray to, but during the time I growing up, I doubt about that.
You had some doubts about your faith.
About my faith, about God. Yeah. Where are you, God? Why you let me suffer that much?
Mm. In that regard, I want to paint that picture for the difficulty of it, and we're going to cover your encounter with Christ and how that occurred, but we're not quite there yet, and you're going to have to come back tomorrow because we're running out of time today. But paint that picture for us about the feelings coming home. What did it mean to be a burn victim in Vietnam?
Wow.
During the war, post-war, you come home to your family that's trying to rebuild,
yeah,
I would think. What was that like for you?
Right. I remember I was in hospital. I feel like normal because everyone was wounded something. I didn't feel different at all. But when I come home, I was alone, and I expect that I can play with my dear friends. But then the reality that they saw me different. I was so scarred. I was so disabled, ugly.
Disfigured, sure, from the burns.
And then I lost that friendship. I was so lonely.
What would those kids say to you?
They scared to play with me.
They're scared to play with you.
Yeah, because, you know, they saw my scar at the beginning. It's so hot, I hardly took over my clothes.
Right.
And so I can see my scar when I come home from the hospital.
And that's your left arm, your back, and down your back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they had fear, and that fear drove them to alienate you.
And I was really clenched like that.
Yeah, and your left hand was balled up.
Mm-hmm.
But that just, and I'm, you know, again, that happens in so many different ways within children and relationships with kids.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you cope with that? How did you?
I'm so thankful with my family, my brother and sister and cousin. They really love me, and they help me to do exercises every day. Honestly, it's so painful that I didn't want to do them. And I remember my mom just really, she helped me a lot.
Yeah.
And she make my life a little bit every day better. And I never forget what she say. Kim, you are when you were a child, you look so beautiful. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, everybody love you. I love you so much. But I cannot carry on your pain.
Huh.
You have to deal with it. And please don't cry.
Oh, my goodness.
It makes me cry. And if you don't want to be disabled, you must do your exercises. And I love my mom, and I obey my mom. I did. And she's really right. Slowly, slowly, I got much better. As you can see now, I still have the scars, but I don't have being as a disabled like before.
Right.
I got much better.
Your limbs function.
Yeah.
But it's the scars that remain.
Yes, and that is about physical pain, the scars. But it's, I have to deal with trauma and nightmare.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's not easy.
Kim, I hate to cut in right here, but we're out of time. What an amazing story. And we need to hear more of how you walk through that physical pain. And most importantly, how you accepted Jesus Christ into your life and the work you're now doing today to bring the message of peace to victims of war. Can you come back and be with us next time?
Yes, it's great for me to come back tomorrow.
Well, I hope you'll listen in next time for this powerful story as it continues. And it may be that you're struggling with something in your life. We're going to encourage you to seek out spiritual solutions with a trusted local pastor or Christian counselor. Start with scripture, pray, and seek out some help. Well, thanks for listening. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, I'm John Fuller.
For a copy of today's broadcast and other helpful resources, visit our website at families.org.au. And remember, Focus on the Family Australia is on Facebook.